Hello and welcome to We Cut Heads, a Spike Lee podcast. I'm your host Spencer, and with me is a he's a bit of a traitor to his boss. He's been selling illegal waffles
illegal.
On the side, making about fit. Yeah, illegal.
You're not gonna get the. No one gets the law involved in this movie. There's you know, we're not gonna make a big deal about this, okay? I was trying to calculate how many waffles he sold under the counter, so. It was 40 francs, right, per waffle.
Yes, and, four. And yeah, he made like 15,000.
That's what
month?
He told her. So the boss didn't notice he wasn't making that much money or something, because to get from 40 to 15,000, that's a lot.
That means he's only selling his stuff
most of the time. And that means that it's probably like mostly stale waffles too, because we see him, you know, we see her making them and stuff like that. But his stash is apparently underneath the counter in a plastic bag. Anyways, hey, it's Joel here. And I don't sell waffles, or as we call them in this country, Belgium waffles.
Yeah. So this episode is the second half of the 1999 pairing. First, we did Summer Sam with Gina Radcliffe, a.k.a. G-Rad CC's Pizza, and Ben Sunday from the Ran episode of Season 1, which I think was one of the last ones we did, if I remember correctly. So if you go through like the podcast page, it's not too far back. And Gina was on 5 times on the first season. But... This will be Rosetta, the 1999 Cannes Palm d'Or winner by the Dardenne brothers. Dardenne.
I've heard it both ways, so you pick whichever way you like. Dardenne.
Yeah, I've heard of them, but I'm not sure how I heard of them. Exactly, but it's like a name I've been familiar
like
with for a while.
It's like a film nerd type name that somebody would like, somebody that's just rattled out, like kind of a. I honestly I haven't seen. This is the only one of their movies I've seen. I know about 2 Days, 3 Nights. I think the other one, or 2 Days, 1 Night. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
and that was
I know what I'm talking about. I haven't seen that.
I think that was nominated
heard.
For Best Foreign if it didn't win at the Oscars 1 year. And I think that also made them have, you know, a lot of visibility in their career. But, yeah, I can't say when I heard of that or them.
Yeah, they seemed... like, with the film people I talk to on Twitter and have had on our show, they seem to be popular with them. Like the people who are really into like the art house and international cinema stuff that they keep up with. And I know Kessler is a huge fan of them. And I remember, Chris and John are too. And if you have listened to the episode on Cotton Comes to Harlem, at the very end, Chris says, you know exactly what type of movie this is, Rosetta is, and by like a minute, and you know if you're going to like it or not. And like, I thought he was being hyperbolic, like he can be, but like, oh no, he was completely right. Like this movie definitely sets its tone and its feeling pretty immediately, and you know it's like if you're going to be like annoyed or you know, it has a very very strong presence from the very first frame.
The first thing you've seen is such an aggressive use of like the camera, like out of the blue, no introductions, all of a sudden following through hallways, you know, unknown person. We don't even see this person's face. It's just a stalking moment, rushing through a facility, and you're like, "What the heck is going on here?" And then the actions that follow are kind of outrageous, like in a civilized way, you know, like, they're like, whoa, 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 nobody acts like this. Well, somebody might act like this, I guess. At least our character definitely has no problem freaking out the way she does.
Yeah, we should, there's not much of a plot, besides it's just this teenager named Rosetta. She lives in a trailer park, and she's taking care of her mom, because her mom's a drunk and won't get a job. And so it's Rosetta just trying to deal with responsibility and growing up. And it's, I think, maybe a week or two. There's no clear indication of time, but I feel like it might be like a couple of
weeks. Yeah, a week two or two weeks, sounds about right. Maybe not even that long. But it's like, yeah, her daily progress. She's got such a crazy yet mundane like route that she takes every day, you know, because of these things that she's put on herself, like the, you know, like she's not going to be dealing with any shady people. She doesn't want any handouts at all, which goes as far as like not even government charity. And she also has all these like little hidden spots that she does because she doesn't, it seems like she doesn't want to interact with anybody she doesn't have to in her life. And also is doing, she does slightly, or things that she thinks if she got caught that people are going to take advantage of her. Like it's, once you get the beat down, it's really weird how she moves through her whole life.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, she's very, like, her emotional range goes from kind of stoic and deadpan to very big, explosive emotion. Yeah. But she's also a teenager, so it makes sense. And actress, what's her name? It's Emily. I guess they say Emily. I'm not good with French names, so I'm going to say names wrong here.
Emily.
Emily.
Equen.
Yeah. That was her first movie, and she was, she said she, when they filmed that, she was 16, turning 17. And, yeah, so, like, it's a very, I don't know, what do you call it, naturalistic acting? Like, because it kind of is in a weird zone of, like, it's kind of natural and, like, I don't know. I don't know actor terms. But then it's also kind of melodramatic.
Yeah, yeah. The movie gives this, like, illusion of cinema verite, you know, like we're actually watching real life, the way we follow her around, because there is, it doesn't feel like a scripted movie. Like, any of the interactions she has doesn't feel scripted. I think the most scripted part, as far as I felt watching this, was when she was interacting with the guy who actually owned the waffle thing. Because when she's when she loses that job,
the boss,
because he's there's so much information fed to you just by like brief mentions and stuff like that. The boss's son apparently failed out of school and has to come back and work, so he can't afford to have her anymore. And she does the same thing she does in the beginning of the movie, which is like, I refuse to leave the job. You can't do this to me, which is not how jobs work. not you can't do that. Like, oh, yeah. You're right. Go ahead and get back on your shift at McDonald's. but he, in the, when she does that, instead of like freaking out and threatening to call the police or something like that, he's like, no, I promise you, it's only a couple of weeks. I'm going to give you your job back. Even when she's like literally on the floor holding onto a bag of flour in protest. Like, that's, I don't know if that's a realistic reaction, but you know, there are kind people in the world, I guess.
And it shows, Belgium.
It's definitely,
it has to be something in Belgium. I thought it was France for a stretch because they're speaking French. But seeing a trailer park outside of like the U.S. and Canada, to me, I don't know why struck me as strange, but I was like, oh, holy shit, I never really seen a French movie where people live in a trailer park.
Yeah, me neither. The closest I can think is I've seen some English movies where, like, people are at least at campsites and stuff like that.
Yeah, like there are Monty people in Snatch. What I was thinking. But they don't. But it's not a permanent thing. It's just they're Armani and they travel all the time. But this is like, it was just like a white trash trailer park in Belgium. And it's like, no, it's just you don't see that side of like Europe or Western Europe in like, you know, in these like prestige pictures.
And these are extremely poor people. Like these are people that for some reason can't get government aid or anything like that because. Yeah, like you're, before we were recording, we were talking about on the disc. There's interviews with the directors, and they were talking about like this is an extreme situation because in reality, Belgium has laws where like you know if you were in the situation as this girl with her mother, like they would be giving her money and all this stuff like that. So it's set up that Rosetta, for some reason, obviously her mother's not functioning, so she can't get her mom to go out and fill out the paperwork, but she also doesn't want that stuff anyways. Because there's a later point where, when she's looking for work, she goes and talks to somebody at, like, a facility that helps poor people, and he's like, I don't have any jobs for people that haven't, unless they've been long-term unemployed, but, you know, we can help you with aid if you need. And she's like, no, I don't want any aid. Don't you need somebody to clean the facility? And she's like, we have volunteers that do that, you know, and she just leaves.
Yeah, she's very proud, and she makes a big statement of stance, of she wants a real job, she wants real, you know, a real normal life. She doesn't want government help because then it makes her lesser than, it makes her, you know.
Right, she thinks there's some weak sort of level of respectability that comes with the standards of what she perceives to be a normal life. I mean, talk about, like, not wanting a handout. The scene in the beginning when she first goes back to the trailer park and goes into the trailer, mm-hmm. and her mom's preparing a fish, and she's like, where'd you get that fish? Did that guy give you that fish for sex? Mom, like, holy crap, like, you guys probably don't eat that well. Like, most of the time we only see her drinking water, and she takes the fish and she tries to throw it outside, for God's sake. Like, that's how much she doesn't want anyone to, like, help them.
She's very, she wants to be completely self-sufficient, which I understand, but also asking for help is totally okay. But I don't know, maybe this could be a statement on Belgian culture, or, you know, possibly, because I feel like there's some stuff here that won't translate to us.
I mean, I've never been in the situation that she's in, so I wouldn't even know. Like, some people may watch this and be I know exactly what this is like. But, yeah, I don't know about her attitude kind of thing. Like, that's what makes the character memorable and unique.
Yeah, but I also feel like, since the Dardenne brothers have such a big reputation, maybe, I don't know, maybe, like, there's some political stuff or, like, social stuff about that specifically Belgian or French, you know, area that won't really make sense. Because I feel because the whole thing of, like, the street stand of waffles, like, we were talking about earlier how that struck us as a strange thing to see on the street, just selling dry waffles with, no, like, no maple syrup or anything on it, just eating, like, a pretzel.
Have you been to Europe at all? Not to...
I've
been lucky enough to go on a couple occasions, and like food stands like that are pretty normal there. Like the one time I went to France, there were a whole bunch of people that just like sold crepes. like every kind of crepe, savory crepe, sweet crepes, and stuff like that. And it's like every other corner for some reason was in more of the metropolitan area. Like, oh, okay, I guess these people really like their crepes. So maybe it's just like the equivalent of that. Like, literally, Belgium is full of waffles. I don't know.
Yeah, but, like, this is nitpicky, but it wasn't even, like, anything on the waffles. It's just basic waffles. And it's, like, with, like, a taco stand, yeah. You can customize that a bit. You know, with, like, I don't know, like a Philly cheesesteak stand, you can customize it, but it's, like,
I don't know. It's just a waffle. I get my waffle, I get my beer, no. And I leave. And for, you know, and people in Europe have a completely different way of like eating meals than we do too. You know, something like that would be self-sustaining without having all the extra stuff on there, or self-sustaining. It would be sustaining for the person that was eating it. Like in this movie, yeah, like there's true, a part where she's just eating a hard-boiled egg, but she eats it. In a way that I've never seen somebody eat it before, where she's kind of like, what am I trying to say? She's like enjoying it is not the word, but she's like being mindful about it. She's like actually tasting each bite she's doing. It's, you know, it's just a thing. It's not like those Italians in Summer of Sam that just like stuff their mouths full of whatever pasta gets put in front of them, you know.
Yeah, gabagool and linguine.
I can't remember what the cops when they go to visit when they go to visit the maid man.
Guy, yeah, the one black person who has a line in a movie, who is Roger, the guy who's a Joseph. I think he's in every Spike movie we've talked about so far. Yeah, I don't think we got to it in that Summer Sam episode, but like I like that little tease of, oh, the cops are gonna solve the case, and it's like, oh, no, they're not.
Yeah, not those cops. Yeah, one of the many storylines that are just
going back to Rosetta. Did you notice the only named characters are Rosetta and everyone else is the mother's boyfriend, the boss, the campground's manager.
And we didn't even, like, learn her name until I think she said it herself. Or they say it in the beginning.
No, I think she does say. I think it's the first indication of her saying it herself.
When she gets to lie in an actual bed or whatever for the first time.
Yeah, and I watched some extra features. One of the interview with Emily and Olivier Gourmet. Yes, that. I've never taken French, so if it bothers anyone listening, I'm sorry.
Is anybody but, famous? Oh, he's like the boss, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, and he's an extra. He was talking about he's been in most Dardenne movies, and he even won the best actor at Cannes in 2004. The film, but like he's a regular. And he was talking about I forgot where I was going with this. He's talking about
We were talking about her name, and now she didn't say her name. And then you were talking about the extra feature or something about.
Yeah, I can't remember what's going on with that, but oh, but I can't remember the connection I was trying to make with that. But, the interview with, kind of between him and Emily, or whatever her name is, and they talked about the how the Dardenne brothers work, and they would, rehearse a scene with the actors in an isolated environment, and they would not have any of the crew members there. They just rehearsed it until they got it to where they felt it was right. And then once they felt it was right, then they would have the camera, like the crew there to film it. And like the Dardenne brothers wouldn't necessarily give like specific directions of like how to shoot it, because they just kind of assumed the cameraman would like pick up on, you know, like the on like where the scene was going. And like the guy, the boss, he was talking about that there are no marks to make. It's just like they're just literally acting in this environment, and they just, you know, it's thick, like it's kind of like no different than other people that like he's talking about. There's like he likes working with them because he finds that more fun to do as opposed to like making hitting marks and doing like the normal routine. And it does show, because the movie does feel in some way like more natural, this way people exist and you know, this exist in their environments. Oh, and I remember connecting with the name that the actress Emily was saying that I can't, maybe it's her, but there's a thing like there was a mention of Rosetta's father.
Oh, that one was point. During the interview with but the directors then, were saying this. That they took it out.
Okay. Yeah. Because they felt it would kind of offset everything.
Like, it wasn't a movie about...
Which I find interesting.
...any men, basically. It was only solely about her, about Rosetta.
And the Dardennes say they auditioned about 600 people. But then the other brother says, no, it's more than that. And they never clarified a number. But in the Emily interview, she says it was about 2,000 people. Like, I responded to, like, the newspaper ad. But, you know, the boss, Olivier, whatever Olivier. He said earlier.
Like, Laurence Olivier.
Olivier. Oh, okay, Olivier. Gotcha. Yes, it was him. He was talking about like how they shoot it, and there are no covered shots in this movie. It's just like long takes, basically. It's like that just adds like the, I guess, some of verite,
sense of realism to the environment.
And he talked, which I guess is that like documentary style, or is documentary style something different?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure what would differentiate. I mean, because cinema verite is kind of documentary style.
And like Olivier was talking about, it's just like they would just take the magic moment in every scene, and they would rehearse, kind of like Kubrick style, like rehearse the same thing over and over and over again. Which it does show, like it feel. And like he had to learn. Olivia had to learn how to make, I'll say pretzels,
waffles, waffle mix,
waffles. And, yeah, he had to learn like the way you move in like that in that environment of like how you pick up the bag of flour and how you open the bag of flour to a point that's natural, so it would look real. And it's just like hearing him talking about like the acting part of it. Was like, okay, this
I mean, is really cool. The movie comes off as like a real, like I said, it feels like a real thing.
Yeah, and he says, he said, it's for an actor, this is an action movie. Actors are always doing something.
You know, an action movie like, is actually a different thing than that. This is an action movie.
I don't know. What's that for actors? It is because like you get to
right, but they have actors in action movies.
Do your
so
actor thing.
You know, what do they think of those movies?
Okay. Who knows? Maybe the Dardan brothers like action movies. Maybe they like Luc Besson shit. Who knows? I don't know their life. They might be like Hitchcock and like everything. Okay, we didn't really talk about the guy, her only friend.
I thought this guy was going to be a total creep.
Yeah, when he was introduced, my first thought was, is he going to get her pregnant? And it turns out he has a wife or something. Because, again, I thought it was still French. And I was like, okay, this is going to be like a French drama. So there'll be like a cheating and pregnancy with another woman. So I was like, they're like, oh, he's just trying to be her friend. And
well, and he's obviously interested in her, but she can barely even make eye contact sometimes. It's like she doesn't have that sort of capability emotionally. There was some scene between them where she actually smiles, and it's like, whoa. Like, I'm watching a different movie. I can't remember what part it was, though.
Was it? Was she with him when she smiled?
I think so.
Was it when he like trying to do a backflip?
That's exactly.
Or like
it was
a somersault or whatever he was trying to do.
Like, oh, she asks like, is that your award? And he said, oh yeah, I got it for gymnastic, blah, blah, blah. And then he tries to do it. And, you know, he's kind of, it's a small space. It's kind of clumsy. And she does. Yeah. You see her actually, she can't help but smile at that. And like, to the same point there, you almost feel like she might smile when he's, you know, turns on the music and he's trying to force her to dance and he's like actually spinning her around. But that, of course, that ends up not being a good thing. She's got this condition where, I think during the interview they say it's cramps. Mm-hmm. And like, that's what I thought. But I also thought it might be like an ulcer.
Yeah.
Because of how much stress she puts on herself.
Hmm. It could be that. Because then there's a moment where she takes out a blow dryer, which I couldn't tell what it was at first, so I wasn't sure what was happening. I'll be honest, I thought it was like a vibrator for something.
That's honestly, that's what I thought too, because she's like, I'm like, her mom's just in the other. I guess, you know, if you live in the trailer with mom, you got to do what you got to do. And, like, then she's
like her face.
You know, it's like, okay, no, never mind. It's a hair dryer. She's, like, warming that part of her abdomen.
Yeah, and I'm not a woman, and I presume you aren't either.
Not recently.
I've never heard of this for menstrual cramps.
I've heard of, like, putting a heating pad or something like that on the area. But, you know, like her mom says, like, different things work for different people, so. But, the reason why I thought it might be not be cramps, it might be an ulcer, is because other than that we assume it's cramps, they don't say it's cramps in the movie, and there's no other indication of her having a period. And I didn't know if that was because she's so underfed or something like that. I know that happens where malnutrition will cause it to go away or what, but there, you know, there's no like sanitary napkins, there's no blood or anything like that, so. And
yeah, I mean, it could be ulcers because she's trying to pay off the rent and she's scrambling and like,
right.
I can't. And there's a scene where she goes to the resale clothing store and the woman turns her back and walks away. Does she steal clothes or that's the clothes that they won't take?
That's the clothes that they won't take.
Okay, I couldn't tell.
She wouldn't steal clothes.
I was taking notes. Spencer. It was early in the movie. I wasn't
Would you
sure.
steal a car?
I'd steal a movie. The good old days of DVD.
Yep. You know, going back to the action movie thing, this movie is an action movie to me because of how much she gets around. Like, she doesn't stop. Like, when somebody tells her, like...
You mean physically, like,
yeah, she's always walking. She's always going to play. She's, like, ducking down. She's, you know, changing to different clothes or something like that, or fixing something real quick. And it's, like, this fast-action movement. Like, she can't stop. She knows that if she does stop, that she, you know, her mother's going to suffer. I think she's more worried about her mother than herself in that case, especially with how the movie ends. And it's like, you know, that's all we're doing. We're just tracing her. We're following after her with the camera. That,
yeah, like the first 3 minutes of the movie is one long take before the first cut.
That's not true.
I was keeping track, unless there was like a cut when she opened the door.
No, because it definitely cuts to... I'll have to watch it again, but I'm pretty sure it, like, the camera follows her for a second, and then it cuts to a thing, and then she ducks under a thing, and then it cuts again to the long cut where she actually confronts the lady that she thinks got her fired.
Well, maybe there's, like, a couple cuts, but, like, it's this very... intense, like, following her through this factory of some kind.
Yeah, I don't... Yeah, I can't...
In my notes, I put it's Zulawski light, where, like, in the Zulawski movie, like, the Possession, there's a really intense argument between Sam Neill and Isabel Ajani, and where she cuts her wrist with, like the turkey cutter that you use during Thanksgiving, and the camera's like constantly moving, but it doesn't go that far. But still, like, it's definitely in a ballpark of like that. Like, this is this like a kind of intense emotion.
What do you mean by a turkey cutter? I don't know what you're talking about.
The thing that you like, the people use, the electric knife.
She cuts her wrist with an electric knife.
Yes, during a fight, and then she, like, starts throwing plates everywhere, and, like, they're screaming at each other. Like, that's a normal scene in that movie.
I don't like this at all.
It's super intense, and it's wonderful, but it's just so goddamn intense.
You said it was Sam Neill?
Sam Neill, yeah.
Where the dinosaurs come in?
This is about a decade before the dinosaurs.
No!
He's a secret agent of some kind. And that's not important. But
the dinosaurs.
He's more than that. He's also Damien in the best Omen sequel.
I mean, he doesn't want to talk about that, from what I understand. So how good can it be?
It's pretty good. I watched it hoping it would be, like, stupid and laughable, but I was like, oh, I kind of like this legitimately. I had the same reaction to Star Trek to animated series. I was like, this will be a good laugh, and it's like, oh, I this is really good.
The animated Star Trek movie, or series?
Yes, I legitimately like it a lot.
Well, it does have an alien on the crew.
No Chekhov, which I've never seen the original series, so I don't have an opinion on him.
Mm-hmm. He gets replaced by an alien.
Yeah, by a big orange alien.
Nice.
Rosetta, she is part of this. Okay, the editor on this movie was Marie-Helene Dozo.
Mm-hmm.
She is. She has been editor on, I think, 5 of Mohamed Salah Haroun's films, 5 or 6. And the editing style in this felt like a little similar to a couple Haroon movies, mainly The Rot, which is one of my favorite movies. And it's kind of a similar thing of a child who's in a position where they're kind of forced to grow up and be an adult. It's just kind of interesting, that parallel of like a teenager forced into a very complicated situation, where in Durant it's more, I'd say Durant is more upsetting, but more watchable than this. Mm-hmm. And they both have, deal with cooking and, the process of making food, where in Durant he works at a bakery, and this one she makes waffles, and you just get to see the process of this is how you make this one type of food. But this is an interesting connection.
That feels like an Italian neorealism thing, but that's just like what I feel most familiar with. Like, we're actually gonna watch these people do this process, like, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, like, the part why I like Drew's or Tommy movies is I like watching the process of stuff happening.
Yeah, them cutting and open freshwater turtlenecks. I know, you're all into that. Wait a minute, I just realized you're the one who's making me watch movies where animals get their necks cut open.
I didn't know that about Tampopo.
Tampopo and
I warn people about... I bring that up with Tuki Buki.
And Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Oh, wait.
Is that legit, or is it not?
What? That they, in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory? Honestly, I have no idea. See, you definitely see a chicken. You definitely see an axe come down, and that's it. An impact. I don't know if the chicken's alive or not. Otherwise, it would go on my list of animals actually killed on screen in movies. I should probably just put it on there anyways.
Yeah.
No animals killed in this movie.
No, I thought you'd see her, like, fillet a fish or something like that with her fish trap. That the first time... Because, like, you see her daily routine... Like, she has, like, a hidey hole where she keeps, like, her galoshes.
Yep.
Because, like...
Or she keeps her nice shoes, it seems like. The purpose is, like, she doesn't want to get them all dirty or something, I assume.
Yeah, I guess. And she doesn't trust it in a trailer because maybe her mom will do something with it.
Yeah, try to sell them or something, yeah. And, or like, trade them for booze.
Or trade it for sex or something, because she's always slut shaming her mom.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think we're qualified to get into the sexual politics of that situation.
Well, either way, it's Rosetta is trying to prevent her from doing that, and her mother is. In the cases that we're seeing, like, you referred to that guy as her mother's boyfriend. That doesn't seem to be the case. It seems to be...
In the credits.
I see.
In some places.
I'm going to provide her with booze, and she's going to sleep with me kind of situation, as far as Rosetta's concerned. And then she hands her 500 francs to pay so they can get the water turned back on, and... When it doesn't happen, she goes over and finds whatever the equivalent of landlord is, zipping up his pants.
The campgrounds manager.
Mm-hmm. That dirtbag. I just like that she was like, I need a receipt for this.
Yeah, she's smart. She wants, a physical record of paying the rent.
Yep. Yep. She paid it.
So we teased a waffle thing earlier. We should probably talk about the whole waffle conundrum.
Like a separate episode, like, of this movie, if it was split into stories. The waffle conundrum.
Yeah, we can get to the waffle, yeah. No, but the boy, who I guess he is early 20s-ish,
Fabrizio is the name of the actor here. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I guess she's always listed as 17 in descriptions of the movie.
Yeah.
And I think he's a little bit older, but I'm not quite sure how much older.
Well, the Dardens themselves refer to as 16 years old in the interview, but they do
him or her.
I mean, it's, you know, like 13 years after the movie was made, so
yeah. I mean, talk about the guy, like
he's over 18 or whatever, yeah. And he has his own apartment, a really shabby-looking apartment that he lives in.
Yeah, and I guess they meet because... they meet because he's selling waffles at a waffle stand. I didn't write down the name of the business because it's not relevant.
Right.
People's names aren't really important.
No.
It's interesting to see, like, it's really just... Or they are a lot of the character names are just the relationship they are to her.
Yeah.
Which, like, it's notable that he gets a name because he's, like, the only friend she seemingly has ever known. Has the mother, the boss, the campground manager, the mother's boyfriend. So it's all, you know, from her perspective. But, so the guy... let's call him Fabrizio. Yeah. I can't remember how to say that name.
Yeah.
In his apartment, she says, you have a waffle iron. Which seems like nothing, but then you learn he's selling waffles on the side.
Right, but when she points it out to him, he says, oh, it's broken. You know, I just have it to tinker around with. But that's obviously a lie. And they grow closer, because at first... she can't get a job, because they don't have a spot open. And then suddenly one does open, but it's at the, wherever he mixes the,
batter.
The batter. Thank you.
And it gets real fucking awkward because the woman barges in on her first day.
Mm-hmm. Well, that woman handles it the way somebody else might handle it. Not the way Rosetta handles it. She comes over and is like, you can't really do that. My baby's sick. Like, you can't just fire me. Like, 10 times in a month? Yeah. Like, I don't know what the situation is, but nobody freaks out. Nobody throws anything. The boss goes and gets the rest of her pay and gives it to her.
Yeah. But also, that's an adult woman with, like, life experience in Rosetta. You don't know how much work experience she has.
Yeah.
But you just know she has, you know, slightly some, but she's clearly not an adult, but she wants to be an adult.
Right. And as far as we can tell, she's a hard worker. Like, we don't really know, but when we do see her work, she just works.
Yeah, she's like a robot. She just needs to have something to do.
Yep.
But yeah, so... she gets a job working, making waffle batter.
Oh, wait, sorry.
I'll allow it. But be careful next time.
Really, because I'm just going to jump off the balcony, or I'll be right back.
Okay. Yeah, and so, like, at some point, I forgot when exactly, he tells her, I have a side business selling my own waffles. I make 15,000 francs a month.
So that happens after she gets let go.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, she once again runs around looking for work, but she's at least hanging out with this guy afterwards because, like we said, we've established she's friends with him. He's kind of set her up in he calls it an apartment. It's not, it seems like the junk room that happens to have a shower in it. But it doesn't seem like she lives there for very long because she's not going to have the money. She doesn't have a job to do that. But yeah, she's just been, you know, hanging out. He's slipping him, or she's, you know, eating a waffle whenever she can afford it and stuff like that. And he's like, yeah, you know, if you want to be If you want to take over my job of selling these waffles on the side, I have no problem with it. You know, 15,000 francs a month.
For 40 apiece?
Yeah.
Which is...
People love their waffles in Belgium, you know?
Yes, I guess it's big business. It's it's 90s, you can do anything.
Let's see here. And calculate this. Okay, so 15,000 divided by 40 is equal to 375. And let's divide that by about 30 days, say, in a month. That's only 12.5 waffles a day.
That's still, you know, every single day.
Yeah.
Average, you have to queue up.
We see her basically sell 12.5 waffles when she has that job. See, here's the waffle conundrum part. She refuses that. She doesn't want to be doing anything shady. She says specifically, I want a real job. She doesn't call him out on it or anything like that. And, but it gets to the point where she hasn't been able to find work. She doesn't know what to do. And so when she goes to see the boss again, she tells him about this scam. How did you feel about that part?
I kind of like everything else leading up to that. It was she's desperate and needed some way to, you know, get a job, some way to, you know, to make money. Mm-hmm. And so I saw it as, like, I don't know, because she's kind of stoic and cold, so it was kind of hard to read her exactly, like whether or not she enjoyed that or not. Yeah. Like, then he starts to pester her and chase her around on his dirt bike.
Well, before, there's a part we left out that's kind of a major scene, that before he gets fired... And before she tells the boss about his scam that he's running, he goes to the campsite to see her, which she's not into. She doesn't want people visiting her. In fact, she doesn't even tell her boss that that's where she lives at first. Like, she doesn't want people to know that she is poor, that poor. And so he shows up, and she, because she heard a motorbike, she thought it might have been the campground weirdo.
Oh, yeah.
And threw her fishing lines into the river. So she's trying to get it back with a stick. He's trying to help. And he accidentally falls into the water. It stands out to me because I immediately was like, well, why doesn't this jackass know how to swim? He's acting like he's going to drown. And then, like, I realized that's a privileged individual, me, not knowing how to swim. Didn't you say you don't know how to swim, Spencer?
I never learned.
Yeah, see, it's like me, to me, living in California my whole life, and, like, close enough to the beach where it was something that could be, you know, gone to, it's like, of course I know how to swim. Everybody knows how to swim, right? No, not necessarily. And something as like, small-looking as the pond that he fell into could equal death for a person who doesn't know what to do, especially if they panic.
Yeah, it was like, I think Richard Lionheart died, maybe Barbosa, I forgot who it was, but one of, like, the Crusaders died after falling face first in, like, a 6-inch puddle or stream.
A guy he deserved.
No. Yeah, he's wearing a heavy ass armor and then fell, and it's like they couldn't pick him up and he died.
Yeah. So he's drowning, and her reaction is not to try to save him. Her reaction is to run away. And at first, she just, like, goes so that she's out of sight of him. She can still hear him splashing, saying, please help, you know, help me, like, I can't, I'm stuck, I'm sinking. And eventually it stops, and that's when she finally reacts how you might expect a person to react, which is she tries to find a stick long enough for him to reach out and grab, and she gets him out of the water. So, but at first, she was simply going to let him drown.
Yeah. Which is not, this is like the, the first indication of her kind of like letting someone die
Yeah.
that we get to see.
Like on reflection, I almost feel like it was a like if he dies, then I could have his job kind of thing. Although,
Because
like maybe not like consciously.
I don't know. Because she just needs money that badly. I think maybe she's conscious of that aspect of it too. But it's debatable because like her performance is so kind of cold and distant. It's you can read like what you want out of it.
Yeah. So, I mean, that makes it seem like she's willing to sacrifice him. So, when it does come to the part where she tells the boss, like, he's been scamming you this whole time,
Yeah,
and.
and she says, and she's, I think she says, I don't want to go with you, he'll know. And
Right.
he's, the boss says, it won't matter either way.
No, he says he'll know anyways.
Oh, yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So he does. He gets fired. She takes over the job, and this is another moment where we actually see it seems like she's happy. Like she's happy to be in this cart, like serving people, like having like a place to be. And it's kind of it's this whole other side of her that like you didn't even know necessarily existed. Like being pleasant, like people come up ordering waffles, like, oh, thank you, have a nice day. You know, she even gives them a little smile and stuff like that. It's like, who's this person? This is a person who feels like she's doing something normal. And
Because,
that's not normal for her.
and as she gets off of work, he stalks her and follows her. And you see her like, kind of like in Texas Chainsaw, you like hearing like all the motors and like generator in the background.
Yeah.
You see her like hear that in the background. And it gets kind of, honestly, it gets tense because like, he's near, but you don't know when he's gonna show up.
It is really weird how that becomes tense. Like, especially the parts where she's like actually closing the stand and she's like putting the lock. I kept expecting him to like run up or something like that. It's like, why am I feeling so nervous for her? It's crazy.
It's part of the way it's shot. I like this kind of how personal it's shot, and the emotion just makes it feel kind of like a horror movie
Yeah.
at times.
Yeah. It's really good. Like
Yeah,
it's so well done. I can't really fault anything that happens in this movie.
and then the end is kind of I it really surprised me. Because I was so wrapped up into it, and I was like, that's it?
Yeah.
Which I've seen some reviews of people who hate it, and it's like, I can see this kind of not working with someone.
I mean,
When I say
yeah.
hate it, I mean like, I saw like 1.5-star reviews on,
I can see why somebody would hate this movie, and that person is the kind of person who expects a certain result from their movies every time. And when they get something unusual like this, it's like this is not what movies are supposed to be. And that ending, yeah, that ending doesn't give you any resolution. You know, when she spends the last of her money on gas so that she can warm up their trailer, basically. But the burden is so heavy, and she doesn't ask for help from the person she purchases it from. The jackass is there on his bike, and he's kind of just like, he's doing
But
like one
before
of those
that,
old style, like driving around in circles, trying to intimidate somebody.
yeah. But like before that, she makes a hard boiled egg. But she turns off the gas oven. So then, like now, I'll turn it back on, and she turns it back on, and then it lays back, and then you hear the sound of it clicking off, and then that kicks off. Like we'll have to get more gas, 'cause then we can die. And and literally the whole last segment is it. I don't know. It has to be like 3 to 5 minutes of this her carrying the gas tank back to the trailer, as the guy, Fabrizio, as you were saying, like that old school thing of trying to intimidate her, and then she drops it, and I guess he offers the help, and
I mean, he doesn't say anything, but he like gets off his bike and he's like trying to help her up, yeah.
And she's trying to recuperate, and then you have cut to black.
See, I didn't realize that she was leaving the gas on that thing. For some reason, I missed that part. But that that adds an entire layer, because I thought she was getting more gas because she just, because right before she does that, she quits her job. She calls the boss and just says, like, "This is Rosetta. I can't work for you anymore," and hangs up. And that's after she finds her mother in like in a drunken pile and has to carry her back. And I thought it was
her. That's when I realized, oh, this is a suicide thing.
I see.
She's gonna kill both of them in one swoop. Because she like closes the windows too.
Yep. And previously, I mean, she'd stuff the tissues into the window, and I assume that was because, you know, to keep the cold out or something. That's why I was like, the gas is to heat the trailer. But I think you're right.
Yeah, it's like this, like, it's not like a lot of things in this movie. It's not said. If you're paying attention, you'll pick up on it. And it's just this really harsh ending of like, well, like, do you think she's gonna go through with it, or do you think him?
Not at that point, no. I mean, in my opinion, I don't think she would at that point, because she's having a breakdown. Right there, she's finally realizing that she can't do it on her. Like I said, the burden is so incredibly heavy.
Yeah, and like her and her mom have these really awful fights, and like her mom pushes her in the water, and in the interview with the actress, she talks about the costume, which was thick tights, a wool skirt, and a track jacket. And like that's just like very heavy, thick clothes that weigh you down, like the way the world weighs her, like the way she carries the world on her shoulders, and like when she gets thrown, pushed in the water, like it gets even heavier. And so like, you know,
I was also thinking about the fact that she doesn't have any other clothes. Like this is the only thing she ever wears.
She wears yellow pants after she gets pushed into the water for a little bit, but then she switches back to the wool skirt and the thick tights.
She had to steal that from somebody. No, I don't even know. Because, I mean, the weird thing is, like, one of the ways she gets money is her mother is, like, repairing clothes and stuff like that. So, yeah. But she doesn't. She literally wears maybe like four or five different articles of clothing the entire movie. And like we talked about earlier, her shoes. The shoes she wants to be wearing to be presentable, she has to keep in a completely separate place because she doesn't want them to get messed up or sold or whatever.
Yeah, and the Dardennes talk about, like, the backdrop of this is, like, this our TV special about the Eastern Bloc countries and, like, the trailer parks in the Eastern Bloc countries and how, like, the poverty is so severe there and, like, how it went from a communism to a, as they said, a harsh capitalism that kind of left people, that certain people weren't able to keep up, so they're forced into, you know, this extreme level of poverty.
Yeah.
So there is, like, you know, a political background to this that, like, what else was I looking for? No, that's it. It's kind of like the economic, you know, relevant, like the at the time stuff of like the post Soviet Union countries trying to adjust, and like certain people, you know, are kind of stuck in a shitty position and they can't really get out of it, because the whole movie is about her being stuck in a cycle.
Yeah. So I want to compare this to Summer of Sam.
Okay, so what do you have? I can't really think of anything.
That's the thing. These feel like exact opposites. I was trying to work out how to say that, like, because Summer of Sam feels like it's crazy how much it feels like a Hollywood movie. Yet unpolished, like just a bunch of ideas kind of jumbled around with a through line. And this movie that feels so real and naturalistic feels like it's polished down to like a gleaming stone, though, which is weird. Like how did we end up on somehow the more flashy, shiny, movie, or not shiny, the more flashy movie being the one that feels less like a finished product than the one that like feels like real life. It's just like, it's fascinating to me how different these two movies are.
Yeah, I guess they're kind of similar in that they are slices of life, but and they both kind of end abruptly. One more abruptly than the other, but yeah. They both, you know, don't have like traditional endings.
Yeah, like they could have made a version of this movie that, I mean, it would have been way different, but like of Adrian Brody's character trying to hustle and like break away from the weird Italian neighborhood that he no longer connects with and stuff like that.
And his end would make sense, because like you just end him getting beaten and cut the credits.
Yep. And he loves waffles.
He does look Eastern European, so he probably does.
There was a severe lack of disco music in Rosetta. In fact, I don't think there was any music at all. Oh, wait, no, there was the part where he played a tape playing the drums terribly.
Yeah, that was great.
Mm-hmm.
I love the comedy in this.
Yeah.
Of him trying to impress her, which I guess he is still trying to seduce her at that point, but I think, I couldn't tell, because he was like also respectful and not, and he once he realized, I'm not going to get anywhere. He's like, I guess I'll be your friend. And he seemed okay with that.
Yeah. Oh, he seemed like he cared for her.
I don't know if I'll keep this in, but Rosetta kind of reminds me of a friend I haven't... You know, I don't want to talk about it, and I'll cut this part out.
You used to have a friend that would wrestle people whenever she got fired?
Yeah, let's say that. besides like the you said it best with like the how they're opposites, and this one is flashier, and yet seemingly nothing happens, or other one and a lot happens, but it's kind of not as meaningful.
Yeah. Yeah, like you want to strip down the other one, and this one you feel like if it stripped it down anymore, you wouldn't really have a movie at all.
No, I want to see more Dardenne Brothers movies now.
Yep, same here.
I don't know what the good ones are. I know Kessler and the Pink Smoke guys are going to hear this, and you know, if guys hear it, you know, let us know what are the good ones to watch. Because I'm sure, like everyone, like every other filmmaker, they have their not good ones in the mix, too.
Yeah, what's their best sci-fi movie? Oh, wait.
Like, I this approach... I mean, never mind, I kind of read it earlier. But, like, the way that it's shot kind of reminds me of Texas Chainsaw in some ways.
Yeah.
But, like, cool. I kind of... I love Texas Chainsaw so much, I kind of connect every movie to that in some way.
I mean, no, Texas Chainsaw has so many naturalistic shots and environments I hesitate to say interactions, but some of them do feel that way. But,
yeah.
So I totally get that.
And the sound design kind of reminded Texas Chainsaw a bit with the bike. But,
yeah, and there's that part where the boss is showing her how to put the flour into the mixing bowl, and he's like, "Oh, hold on, I have to go get some more." And he slides open the door, and Leatherface is right there. He goes, "Whoop!" and he knocks him in the head. That's one of my favorite parts of all movies of all time, because Leatherface is just so surprised.
I love the reading of the movie that is. It's just the worst day in his life.
Yep. Like, oh god. I had to kill two people already. Broke into my house.
Yeah, but I want to bring up the awkward dinner thing again with the drums. Because the whole time he's doing the thing that I think there's a Seinfeld episode about where he's like, okay, this is a good part. Now listen to this part. Yep. And then he says, I'm all bad here, but I get better in a minute or two. Just wait. Mm-hmm. And she is just making no eye contact, eating French toast.
No, yeah. Honestly, to get a little personal here, this is mm-hmm. something I've been discussing with the therapist I've been seeing. It's like you don't have a personality if you become your actions, like, that becomes your personality. Like, her personality mm-hmm. is, I want to be somebody normal. So I don't have a favorite type of music, and I don't really know why people would want to dance, and like, fun is, I understand the concept of fun. It's not something I'm pursuing, you know?
Hmm.
And that's that scene where she's like, you know, like, what kind of music do you like? It's like, I don't know anything. It's like, she hasn't developed any taste like that, because she is a person looking for work, and that is her altogether.
Yeah, she's I mean, she's like a robot to mm-hmm. an extent. Just very Emily won the best actress at the Cannes for this.
Yeah,
and I looked to see if the Academy recognized it, but they seemingly didn't recognize it at all, which again shows how useless the Oscars can be, and how they can just ignore stuff.
Yeah. Well, it was all about American Beauty.
Yeah. Was that? I don't even want to look up the Oscar, like the Oscar shit that you don't care much. But
I mean, that was the whole thing. It was 1999. That's why we chose this movie.
Was
that instead.
Big? Was it? Yeah. Was American Beauty that big of a deal? Because I was 8, so I wouldn't have known what people were talking about.
Oh yeah, man, are you kidding me? Like you said, you've seen tons of parodies of it, and that's one of the reasons why it was like, whoa,
no,
I can't believe that plastic bag.
It was like the La La Land of its time.
I feel like La La Land's gone already. I feel like American Beauty stuck around for a long time.
Well, it's come back, but for the wrong reasons.
Well, not in my life.
Yeah. So, Rosetta, it's really good.
Rosetta, watch it today, unless you're depressed.
Yeah, don't watch it if you're depressed.
Personally, I didn't find it very depressing, but I have a way of detaching from movies in general, so.
It's 90 minutes or so. Like, it goes by fast, and when you get to the end, it's like, I want more of this. I want to know more about her life. But yeah, that's Rosetta. I like it more than Summer of Sam, but Summer of Sam is more entertaining.
No, I would watch Rosetta over Summer of Sam again. Sorry,
anyway, that's not important. 1999 movies.
1999. The era of movies. There's so many movies that I've seen, and most of them seem like I would hate them now. For instance, have you heard of a movie called EdTV?
I remember seeing a box at Blockbuster as a kid, but that's the extent of it.
Well, it stars Matthew McConaughey, and, you know, they're filming as real life.
Even though the real world had been on for almost a decade.
Well, that's the thing, yeah. Can you even imagine?
No, I can't imagine. Let's see, my... I'm going to start soft with Batman Beyond, the movie. I remember renting it with friends. We had a fun time. I liked watching the series, Batman Beyond, with Terry and old Bruce Wayne.
Return, and my favorite is episode. This Return of the Joker?
Batman Beyond?
The movie you're talking about.
It could be... Return of the Joker... It's not in the subtitle, but I... What was the other one? Yeah, it could be. I don't know too much into it right now. But, the Batman of the movie, and my favorite episode of the series was the Bane one, where, like, it's a new drug on the street that's, like, these patches that make you super strong. Yeah, it's a really cool show, and it's a, you know, if you have children, you're listening to this, you know, show them the Batman Beyond TV movie. It's good.
I don't want to show my children anything that glorifies violence.
Okay.
Beyond Batman.
Do you have other? I know you have cats.
Let's see. If I can't remember what I mentioned last time other than Ghost Dog. But I think I will bring up... did Ben talk about this? Drop Dead Gorgeous?
It feels like something he would bring up, but I don't remember.
Yeah... Maybe I won't talk about that. Anyways, Drop Dead Gorgeous is an amazing dark comedy that's, it once again shot kind of like a documentary about the participants in a beauty pageant, and it is hilarious. Like, Kirsten Dunst and Denise Richards are like, I don't know, it's a movie that's made me laugh so many times.
I've heard a podcast episode on it, and there's some 90s stuff that they point out that doesn't hold up.
Sure.
Anymore. I think they, like, say, like, retarded in, you know, the casual way, and I think there's some gay jokes.
But yeah, I mean, these people are trash in the movie, though, so...
Yeah.
Not surprised.
I mean, it's a 90s movie, so it's kind of, you know, expect that language.
Yeah.
But, Superstar, the SNL movie, it was a staple on Comedy Central. I watched it a lot. It's really funny. It's a comedy, so you probably don't like it.
That's true. No, it has Will Ferrell in it, that's why I don't like it.
Yeah, or, you don't like Will Ferrell?
I've got nothing against the man. I've just never seen a movie where he's funny in it.
You're missing out.
No, I just...
His movies are hilarious the first time for me, and the second time, deathly boring.
See, I just skipped the first part. go straight to the where I'm going to end up anyways.
Okay. Do you have something else? There's a lot to pick from.
Let's see. If I had to narrow down something else, I guess
Class of 1999?
Yes, that's not from this year.
It should be.
No, it's supposed to take place in the future. Yeah, this is. I've just got so much. I remember Ben talked about Wild Zero last time. That's a great one. I've run out of interesting picks. I'm just gonna go with being John Malkovich.
No.
Which is, you know, a Spike Jones movie, a Charlie Kaufman screenplay, and if you know Charlie Kaufman stuff, then you know it's unusual and funny and interesting. And John Cusack in fine form before he started doing straight-to-streaming stuff. Cameron Diaz, I didn't realize that was Cameron Diaz for a long time. I guess it's just because she looks different, but I've got face blindness too, so who knows. But it's a really funny movie and a kind of a sci-fi premise, you know. I assume people listening to this have seen Being John Malkovich.
Yeah.
I really like the way it's filmed, and I really like the sense of humor it has about it.
Yeah, Mary's brother looks like John Malkovich from that movie.
Mm.
It's kind of weird. That's why I met him. Like she said, he looks just like John Malkovich, and being from Malkovich, like, come on. And then I met him, like, oh, you were not kidding. He looks exactly like him.
I mean, has John Malkovich not looked like John Malkovich? I mean, that's kind of what he looks like.
Yeah, but her brother looks exactly like him. It's crazy.
The Jewel Thief movie.
Yeah. My next one is Conceiving Ada. It's a weird science fiction movie by Lynn Hirsch. I gotta look up her name again. Get to my handwriting. But, Conceiving Ada. It's 97. I misread the year. Anyway, it's an interesting little Tilda Swinton movie that sometimes labeled 99. Okay, Rotten Tomatoes has it 99, but IMDb has it 97.
Yeah, you're making up stuff. That's okay, go with it.
Anyway, it's just, the premise is hard to explain, but it's about trying to connect with Ada Lovelace, who was Lord Byron, the writer, one of his daughters, and Ada Lovelace is responsible for kind of the concept of computer and like actually mapping out a computer, and this is like the mid-1800s, and she had no real way to make a computer, but she had the idea of it, and she was a mathematician and other stuff, and it's trying to like kind of like create an AI to connect in the past to the past with her, or time travel. It's kind of this weird gray area of like it could be both or it could be one of those, and it's unclear. And this really offbeat little indie science fiction movie from that time, and Ada Lovelace is played by Tilda Swinton.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I've seen some other movies by Lynn Hirschman Leeson. I see some other movies with her because she did some stuff with Tilda Swinton early on. They did some interesting science fiction stuff that now the effects don't hold up. They look dated and of the era, but like but the concepts are really fascinating, that like what she was doing with science fiction for that very brief time. Yeah, so Conceiving Ada, I think it's just on DVD. I don't think it's had a Blu-ray or anything like that. It's really streaming anywhere, so That's it.
Yeah, I got nothing out. Like, I just rattle off the other movies: The Matrix,
okay,
The Sixth Sense, Magnolia, Eyes Wide Shut. I mean, there's a lot of movies that came out in '99. I like Sleepy Hollow a lot. I don't know if that's a popular opinion.
Okay, real quick, Xenon Girl, 21st Century, a Disney Channel TV movie.
Thought you said that came out in a different year.
That's Luck of the Irish. That's 2001.
Trying to pull some
shit. Xenon had a young Raven Simone. It's a Disney Channel TV movie. It's what you think it is, but me and my sister watched it and really liked it. And I think it's one of the last TV things we really watched together, and we were still hanging out before she became a teenager, because that was right on the cusp. Yeah, but I have fond memories of watching that on TV with my older sister. And The Little Girl Who Sold the Sun, the final Mbete film. It's a short film. It's only 45 minutes. It's very life affirming, and it's about this little girl who's a paraplegic. That's not the right word. She can't really use her legs. I guess it's paraplegic. So she has two, what do you call them? Like the things that, like, people used to walk with, that they hold on to with their hands.
Stilts?
I don't know the medical term, but, like, you know, like the kind of walking thing.
Anyway. Robot legs?
Crutches? I guess, like, they're...
Oh, yeah, crutches. That's the word. Crutches.
And she's on crutches. She's trying to make money. And so, because her grandmother's blind and can't make too much money, so she sells this newspaper called The Sun. And it's her selling a newspaper. And there's a line where the man who runs the newspaper, Stan, is talking to... the cashier there, and cashier is a woman. She says, "A girl can do anything a boy can do." And then, you know, and she lets a little girl sell newspapers. And it's just that for 45 minutes, and it's just very sweet and life affirming. And like she goes through, and she gets bullied, and you would think it'll get real dark, but, you know, she's very strong, and it's, like, it's a very, very strong, like, people say strong female character all the time, but, like, it's a very resilient, like, female character, and she is, like, will always find a positive, and always find, like, the drive to continue doing what she wants to do, and it's just a very sweet farewell to Mbete.
It's because, like, she stole the sun. Is that why she's so positive?
Yeah, because she sold the sun.
Or swallowed the sun, is that what it was?
Sold? The little girl who sold the sun.
Okay.
And Mbete was dead by the time it came out. He died the year before from, I think, lung cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and track that movie down. Like, his last two short films are really wonderful. And it's about the average African and Senegal. And, they're both very life-affirming, like, little movies he did towards the end. Oh, and Boondock Saints.
No!
Came out. No.
You should watch... Yeah. Hey, listener, if you haven't watched Boondock Saints, you should watch it. And then tell me what you thought about it. I'm honestly interested to hear what people would think about it who haven't seen it before.
I think that's everyone who wasn't a 17-year-old boy at some point.
I mean, I didn't see it till I was in my 20s.
No, but, I saw,
you know,
it.
I had the attitude of a teenager, so.
Yeah. All right, so that's it for 1999. I guess farewell to that. And the next pairing is a Gotch and Hess pairing, so I'll be the Sweet Blood Jesus, which has been recorded already. And
we recorded and Hess. It in the past.
And Gotch and Hess, the OG, which we have a guest for that, which should work out. And the special episode is Eve's Bayou with Bo North. I don't know if she wants me to say her real name.
No, just go by her that name. That's her real name.
Yeah, sure.
It's like a spirit animal.
Yeah, and September is 2008 pairing. That's Miracle at St. Anna with Justin Harrison and either The Class, the Cannes winner, or Slumdog Millionaire. We haven't decided yet. Unless you have a reason against one or the other.
I mean, I've seen one, not the other. So if we can get The Class, I'd rather do The Class. But if we can, I'm fine with Slumdog.
I think The Class is streaming on Amazon, last I checked.
All right.
And the special episode is Melvin Van Peebles episode with Martin Kessler. It'll be on
Martin Van Kessler.
What's the movie called? A Story of a 3-Day Pass, a Melvin's first feature film, which I think is just on DVD, which you have to buy, but you can get a cheap one.
Sure.
And The Watermelon Man, which is streaming on Amazon, has been there for a while. And it will complete the best year of Godfrey Cambridge's film career.
All right.
Yeah.
And right now the world is on fire with Tarantino because of the release of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. You have to put the pause in. So we're going to try to cook up a Jackie Brown episode just because I kind of want to discuss all the influences, stuff like that. Not necessarily. I don't necessarily think Tarantino deserves to be in the same breath as Spike Lee, but you know they both got influenced by all the things that they watched growing up. So yeah.
I don't know when that will be. I have to get in contact with the person.
Yeah, it's not going to be anytime soon, but it will come along.
Yeah, I guess we've got a fitness schedule, so that's it. And have fun. Watch Rosetta. It's worth your time.
Yep. Have fun. Yep. Eat some waffles.
And don't sell illegal waffles. That's against the law.
Yep. You wouldn't sell your grandmother's waffle maker. All right, bye.
The show's email is highandlowpod@gmail.com. It made no sense to change email, so it's the same feed. The show can be found at podbean.com, and Spotify, and other places you can find podcasts. Please rate and review whenever possible. The logo is by Josh Hollis. The music is by James Fell, and thank you for listening.